You may have heard that Wisconsin is a purple state. That's because voters here have a tendency of swinging their support from Republican to Democrat and back again. In western Wisconsin, few districts have swung as much as the 67th State Assembly. Since the 1980s, it's gone from Democrat to Independent to Republican. The seat has been held since 2016 by a freshman Republican who is defending this fall against a Democratic political newcomer. This hour, we'll sit down with both of the candidates to talk about why they feel they deserve the voters' trust. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. And a little primer on the 67th State Assembly District. It contains most of Chippewa County and much of Dunn County. Some of the communities included are Bloomer, Cadott, Cornell, Chippewa Falls, Elk Mound, New Auburn, and Wheeler, among others. Thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. I'm Rich Kramer, and in the studio with me from the 67th Assembly District, I'd like to welcome first Representative Rob Summerfield. He is the Republican incumbent running for his second term. He is a small business owner from Bloomer. Rob Summerfield, welcome.
Well, thank you, Rich, for having me today.
Good to have you. And the Democratic challenger in the studio with us today is Ren Kachuri. She is, of course, a Democrat, and this is her first time as a state political candidate. She lives in Chippewa Falls. Ren Kachuri, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here, Rich.
Pleasure to have you. Listeners, we would like you to get in on this conversation as well. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines. Again, we're talking about the 67th State Assembly District. If you live within the district, we'd love to hear from you. But even if you don't, we still would like to hear your thoughts. Because while these people are hoping to represent the district, they also represent the state as a whole. 1-800-228-5615. So first off, the main question is, why are you running? And Representative Summerfield, I'll start with you. Why do you think you deserve a second term?
Well, right now, this is a very exciting time in the state of Wisconsin, especially here in the 67th and the Chippewa Valley, especially. Record low unemployment, jobs all around. We had record funding for K-12 education. We lowered taxes. We have a great budget surplus. And this is just a few of the things that I know they're on top of the people's heads, but also the investment into broadband, into our foster care bills that we did this last session, homeless bills. I mean, there's a lot of great things that we're doing in the state of Wisconsin, and especially for the 67th Assembly, I want to see us keep on going in that great direction. With my local, you know, ties, born, raised, have a business in Bloomer, pretty much, you know, lived here my whole life, went to the nearest university to the district, UW-Stout, mm-hmm. over Menominee. So, you know, since 2005, I've been up here, you know, raising my family, three daughters, and I feel that we have to keep on, you know, moving Wisconsin forward. This last session, we made a lot of great investments and a lot of great progress, but, you know, one bad legislative session would turn back the clock and go back to the mid-2000s where we were hemorrhaging jobs, unemployment was unbelievable, which we even thought we would never even see, below 6% unemployment, and now we're down below 3%. So I want to keep on moving that, and talking to constituents, I've been getting great feedback, you know, between listening to office calls, emails, out on the doors, community events of people talking, and there's a lot of people looking forward to the future to see, hey, let's keep on going, let's make Wisconsin strong and a great place to live, and especially in the 67th Assembly District, to keep on growing and grow our economy.
Thank you for that, Rep. Summerfield. Ren Kachuri, what makes you want to get into the race and represent the 67th?
Yeah, certainly. So over the last several years, I've spent literally hundreds of hours in school board meetings. I've been meeting with educators both in our K-12 district and in our technical college system. And I've also been speaking with community leaders about some of the priorities they'd like to see change from Madison. And through all of these conversations, really, there was one predominant theme, and that over and over and over again, Madison continues to choose the ultra-wealthy and to prioritize the needs of foreign corporations over the needs of regular working Wisconsinites. So I think from my conversations, a lot of people share some frustration of our lack of investment in public education. Despite this recent funding increase, we actually remain a decade behind in public ed funding. Some people share frustration in the lack of willingness from Madison to address our health care costs. We're continuing to put a Band-Aid on health care issues, and our health care costs continue to go up, and we have fewer and fewer insurance providers here in the region. And we're frustrated by our economy here in the 67th. The poverty rate actually increased in Wisconsin during this time period from 2016 to 2018. And despite having record low jobs, we still have the highest family farm bankruptcy rate here in the 67th Assembly District. So, you know, at a time period in which nationally we have record economic growth and Wall Street literally is going, like you hear it, going off the charts day after day in the news. Why can't we see some of that growth here? And I think at a time period in which economic growth is, you know, for the past 4 or 5 years or so really taking off, we need to make these investments now. We need to not spend political talking points on healthcare and public education. We need to make investments that are real and lasting and make real commitments to working people here in Wisconsin.
We will definitely unpack a lot of these issues that have been brought up so far during this hour. Again, listeners, if you would like to join in the conversation, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We've got a couple callers that we'll get to in one brief moment. But first, I wanted to throw this question out there, and I'll start with Ren Kachuri. The Republican and Democratic parties, at least at the national level, are seeing some strong divisions within their ranks. So I'm wondering, where would you place yourself within the spectrum of your party?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, Rich. And unfortunately, we see the divisions grow wider and wider and wider, especially at the national level. But really here on the local level, when I'm out talking to voters on the doors, whether it's in I'll be in Colfax later today, or I've been in Elk Mound, up in Rob's hometown of Bloomer, or Chippewa Falls, or Cornell or Cadott, people really don't, the majority of people don't really buy into these record divisions. And what they really buy into is that we need an economy that works for all working Wisconsinites. And that's an issue that doesn't have a party affiliation. So I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. If you and your family here in the 67th, I want to see you succeed. Now, there's a lot of talk, I think, that from my opponent and from other Republicans who are going to try to cast me as a radical in some way. And I would like to ask, you know, what is so radical about wanting everybody to have affordable health care? What's so radical about wanting to invest in our public schools? So I'm really committed, regardless of what party you're from, to making sure that the economy works for you, making sure you have a great public school to send your kids to, and making sure you have all the opportunities that you need to succeed here in the 67th. Sorry.
Rob Summerfield, same question to you. Where do you think you would, or where would you place yourself within the Republican Party? There's a lot of people that we're seeing some of the more the old guard Republicans at odds with some of the more Tea Party type people. So where do you think you fit in?
Yeah, I think I'm a common sense conservative. You know, I take ideas from both sides of the aisle. I mean, this last session, right around 90% of our bills had bipartisan support. So when people say there's a big division between the parties, really when you get down to Madison and everything, you know, 90% of the stuff we agree on, you know, have bipartisan support. So I think that's what most people in the 67th want, someone independent, you know, don't want a socialist. You know, that's where some of the Democrat Party has already started shifting. You saw the congressional race in New York, who Costa, I think was her name, took on a sitting incumbent in the leadership. So that's talking people, that's starting to get scary when you start talking that socialism actually works and there's a party that's leaning towards that. So that's what one of my biggest worries talking to people is, you know, we have to make sure, you know, we have to be able to, you know, have health care, which this last budget or this last session, this winter, we passed for to stabilize the health care market. And we got great news on Friday that Molina, the insurance company, is coming back in the market. So this is where the state can, you know, address the health care issues, needs with that. We also passed in the assembly to protect pre-existing conditions. So these are steps, you know, moving forward to keep the health care, you know, more affordable. You know, since the feds, you know, for the last 10 years, Obamacare hasn't worked. We, you know, keep on trying to see these changes. And at the state, we have to do what the power we can to do to make the changes. You know, one of my colleagues, Representative Zimmerman, you know, had a great bill allowing, you know, let's say the chamber groups, farmers to put their resources together and be able to buy insurance that, you know, once you buy in numbers, will be able to reduce the cost. You know, so these are innovative ideas that we are doing, you know, in the state of Wisconsin to help alleviate, you know, some of the health care costs. And also with the K-12 funding, I mean, I can say I took office 2016. My, you know, first budget, you know, puts over $630 million into K-12 education, you know, over $5 million just in our area. And that's without, the sparsity aids, you know, and also passing along the low-spending schools to be able to, you know, raise their spending to make sure that they're competitive with the neighboring school districts. And that's not even including, you know, the school safety grants that we voted for this last spring, over $100 million. So to say that, you know, my priorities are not, you know, education, I can say, hey, look, you know, at this last budget, my first budget, hey, I voted for over $630 million in K-12 education. I said 2 years ago this was going to be one of my priorities, and it was my priority. I proved that, hey, we can work together with the budget, you know, work with joint financing, you know, with Representative Nygren and all, you know, the other leadership, the other colleagues in the Assembly, and some of the Democrats that say, hey, we have a great budget. And at the end of the day, we had money left over in Rainy Day Fund. I think right now we're over $400 million, and I'm looking exciting to see once the new numbers come out, hopefully this winter, to see, you know, what's our next budget look like. You know, with the booming economy, we'll be able to keep on investing in our priorities in the state of Wisconsin.
Ren Kachuri, you wanted to respond?
Yeah, so I cannot wait to hear from callers on the public education issue, because this is one of the number one issues I hear about in the district. And I still continue to attend school board meetings. And one of the things that they tell me is they can't plan a two-year budget because they know that this money is a re-election year bid, right? That this money is flowing into our school districts because we have a lot of Republicans who are worried on this public education issue. My opponent alone last election cycle took $60,000 from a political action committee whose sole goal is to undermine public education. In the Chippewa Falls School District alone, we lost hundreds of thousands of dollars to private vouchers. Now, we are behind our 2020 funding levels for public education here in Wisconsin. And just to give you an idea of how long ago 2010 was, that was the year that Apple debuted their iPad. And that's already, you know, old technology by now, right? So that gives you some idea of how far behind we are in public schools. I was just in the store and this woman said to me, we were, you know, shopping for supplies, and she was shopping for school supplies, and she said, man, I wish we had an election every year, and then everybody would give us a bunch of money for our schools when we have an election. So I am really tired of politicians who use public education, use health care as a political football. I want long-term fixes. I know our school districts want those fixes, and I know that constituents in the 67th want those fixes.
Before Rob Summerfield wants to respond, I just want to lay some ground rules. No references that make me feel old, please. Rob Summerfield, you want to respond?
Yeah, quickly, that $60,000, I can. That's outside money. I had no control over that. But going to a re-election gimmick, that is disingenuous, because I literally walked on the doors, did everything in this last budget. It wasn't re-election budget. It was my first budget. I said K-12 was going to be a very priority spending. And we did that. You know, $204 first year, $202
per pupil.
Per pupil for the next one. And all the other things which I mentioned before. I'm not going to drone on that. However, I'm looking forward to the next budget to keep on continuing funding all sorts of educations. My kids go to public schools. My wife volunteers in public schools. So I am a strong advocate of public schools. But also, I'm also an advocate of making sure we're spending our tax dollars correctly. And also, with the choice. You know, I want to see Jill, Johnny, whoever they are, if they're not succeeding in one thing, you know, one avenue of learning, I do not want to turn the book or say, hey, you can't learn, you have to sit in this one situation where there's maybe an opportunity in another school district, in another choice, another charter to say, hey, this is the way we want to educate our kids. And this is actually going to get Johnny, you know, in 15 years out of school, be a productive member of our society.
Very quickly, Ren Kachuri, then I want to go to the phones.
Yeah, so I appreciate the Jill and Johnny reference, but we have had a 30-year experiment with voucher schools here in Wisconsin, and they have had no demonstrable effect on improving public education outcomes or educational outcomes for any student. In fact, what they've done is they've drained budgets from our public schools, and the public schools are the backbone of our communities, especially our rural communities. You know, I don't just go to the public school to watch the, you know, basketball game or the football game. We go there, you know, kids go there for after school training programs. We have local fundraisers there. They are the heart of our communities, and we need to make real long-term sustainable investments in public schools. We shouldn't be a decade behind. We're losing out to our competitors. We're losing out to places like Minnesota, where a teacher can go down the road and get paid, you know, $10,000 more as a starting educator. And I just would like to see us prioritize public education here in our district and across Wisconsin.
We've got more questions related to education and education funding. But first, let's go to Carolyn. She's calling from Chippewa County. You're on the air, Carolyn. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I grew up on a family farm, and I am asking what steps can be taken to encourage and support the family farm versus the corporate factory farm.
That's a good question. Thanks so much, Carolyn. Since we heard from Ren Couture last, I'll go to Rob Summerfield.
Yes. You know, right now in the state, and you know, the governor's having the ag industry, the farming you know, conference committee in this fall to figure out, you know, what steps can be taken. I'm talking local farmers constantly. I actually had a conversation on Wednesday night out with the supper club with a local dairy farmer. He can't sell his cows because they were worth $1,200, I think, a year and a half ago, and now they're down to $600, and, you know, that's half the price. You know, we talked about quotas. You know, is there something with quotas? Do we need to start looking, you know, this is a set price, you know, this is what we need to produce for milk? I know Canada does it. The tariffs, you know, if you can get Canada to break down the, I think they're about 270% tariff on dairy. If you can get that down, you know, 100, you know, maybe it'd be nice to have it zero. But I'm living in an, you know, reality in the world. You know, those are steps, you know, and, you know, at the state level, I think we can keep on getting incentives, you know, work in broadband, you know, help on those little things to, you know, keep them competitive in business. Also keep the property taxes low. You mean, because farmers do pay a lot in property taxes because they own a lot of property. So if you keep, you know, keep on property taxes low, they'll continue, you know, to give them a bit of relief. But I'm out talking farmers, trying to figure out, you know, what can be done. My uncle was a farmer for, I think, about 40 years. My parents both were farming family. Actually, my parents were the first generation since they came, you know, from Europe in the 1880s, not to farm. You know, they went to a supper club, you know, small business. So, you know, it's a passion for me. You know, this has been with, we've been losing farms, you know, 40 years. You know, I remember in the 80s, you know, to the supper club, my dad's, you know, said, you know, was really dependent on everybody, their milk check, you know, in the week, because if milk price was good, they could come out, you know, and eat. And we've slowly seen over the years dwindling, you know, farms. And I don't know exactly what the best solution is, but I am working my tail off trying to take everybody's opinions in and try to come up with some, you know, way to, you know, help going, you know, with the farm industry, because it's quite volatile. I mean, milk was, I think, $26 for 100 within 2 years ago. Now it's down around 14. And that's a huge swing. If they're somewhere with the feds, you know, working Congressman Duffy, Congressman Kind, Senator Johnson, Senator Baldwin, if you can, you know, maybe look on the federal level to see where the milk pricing is, you know, get maybe that more stable. You know, if you could get it up to 18, you know, work some mechanisms in that. So at least the farmers can know, you know, that there's not big highs and lows in the valley, that there is, you know, some sort of base. So it's a complicated, you know, issue, but I'm pleased with the talks about it, but we have to do more than talk. We have to go into action, and I look forward to, you know, keep on the dialogue and listening to all sides to figure out what's the best way to do it.
If I could follow up quickly, it sounds like you're talking about some form of possible price controls or some kind of market stabilization. Mm-hmm. Is that a Republican kind of a talking point, or no?
I'm not really for sure, because, you know, it's not true free market. However, feeding our people is not always truly free market. You know, we have to feed our people. And that's where if you lose farms, you can't feed the people, then in turn, you have epidemics, you know, you have societal problems. Mm-hmm. So that's where, I mean, I think going back to your original question, what kind of Republicans? I'm a pragmatic Republican. I want to see what's doing best for the 67th Assembly, you know, figure out what's going. So there's some ideas, which I take Democrat sides, Libertarian, Independent sides. So, you know, that's something with the milk quota is, you know, start looking into, would it work? I know Canada has some issues with it, but does it stabilize it? Does it help the family farms? So, you know, that's, you know, an idea I think that needs to be discussed and further vented out.
All right. Ren Kachuri, your response to the caller who was asking what can be done to support family farms versus the large corporate-owned farms.
Yes, thank you so much for the call. So this is really at a crisis situation right now with our family farm bankruptcies. We have the highest family farm bankruptcy rate in the nation here in western Wisconsin. Actually, this year alone, we've lost 380 dairy farms. And so this is really, really at a crisis point. And actually right now, my opponent bringing up the quotas, there's a group of farmers, dairy farmers, in New York right now from the Wisconsin Farmers Union who are talking about how do we investigate and look into these quota systems. So there can be room to have conversations across the aisle on this. And I also think there are many other steps that we can be taking, right? We need to really enforce the regulations on these mega farms that pollute our water and use more than their fair share of resources, right? They are undercutting our family farmers. And I would rather have, you know, 50 farmers with 100 or, you know, a couple hundred cows each in my area rather than one farmer with 5,000 cows, right? We also need to structure our tax laws to favor small family farms and buying from cooperatives, right? Right now, the game supports the big guys. It's a go big or go home model. It's the Walmart model of farming that we're supporting. And we really need to be looking at supporting our family farmers and treating our family farmers like each and every one of them are a Main Street business, right? Especially here in the 67th. Each and every family farm is a small business. So another thing we need to do is return local control to municipalities so that they can make the decisions on whether or not they want these big polluting farms in their area. So we had this incident in Cleveland in the 67th. They didn't know what to do with this hog CAFO that was going to come in. They didn't know if they really wanted this farm here. So they have a moratorium on new construction, right? That was their solution, right? We need municipalities to be more prepared to address whether or not they want to see these mega farms in their neighborhoods, in their backyard. And then finally, I think it's time that we fully fund our UW Extension services. Those are invaluable services that farmers can access. And unfortunately, we've been having a budget shortfall in the UW Extension services for years now and haven't fully returned that funding. We have many unfilled positions in the UW Extension services. So I think it's time to invest in them to really help farmers find the best technology to move their farm forward to help support their business.
If I could follow up real quick with you, Ren Kachuri, I've heard the argument that, you know, some of these CAFOs are family farms. And in fact, I've heard that because of the forces of the market, a lot of the smaller farms, in order to survive, have to keep adding cows, and until they get to that 1,000, 5,000 level. So do you think it's fair to define one-sized farm as a corporate farm or versus a smaller farm automatically being a family farm? Do you think there's overlap?
Yeah, Rich. So what I've been hearing from farmers is that because milk prices and commodity prices are so low, they're not actually investing in the infrastructure upgrades that they would need to have 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 cow farm, right? But one of the things that really concerns me is that there are no plans to deal with all the manure that these farms create. And really, local municipalities get really upset when they have manure that is spread in an area that is susceptible to running it down the Chippewa River, for instance, right? And that was the concern with the hog CAFO that was going in on Bob Creek that would have run into the Chippewa River. So, you know, whatever size farm you are, if you are a farm, you need to know how to take care of your waste. Just like, you know, I, as a resident, pay to have my trash taken out. Walmart pays to get rid of their trash. You need to have a plan for your waste, right? And so we need to be working with the DNR to make sure we're holding these big farms accountable for not having a plan to get rid of all the manure that they create.
And on that subject, I wanted to bring up, there was a last year audit results came out. It was an audit of the DNR that found that the agency was understaffed to a point where it was unable to actually read the reports that were submitted by these large farms. These reports have to do with whether they're in compliance with the state laws on manure runoff and spreading. So it's been 1 year. DNR, at its last Natural Resources Board meeting, said that they're trying to fill these positions as fast as possible. Republican State Senator Rob Coles, who has really pushed the DNR to speed up the process, said that he said, "What good are laws if it's not enforced?" Rob Sommerfeld, I'll go to you. Do you think the DNR says they're trying to fill these positions as fast as possible? Is there anything that the legislature can do to help that?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, being new, you know, not being a joint financer,
right,
you know, being a freshman, this is one of those where you really took, you know, your fellow colleagues. I know Senator Coles did a bill with him. He's passionate about this issue. And I do put a lot of my faith in him, Representative Joe Kitchens over in the Kewaunee area, because they're ground level. It's quite narrow. Get down the groundwater.
Yeah, the karst,
it's, you know, it's a different water, you know, or land from where we're at. And I've had meetings at Joel, Representative Kitchens, two doors down from me. We've had long conversations. I said, you know, keep me in the loop, you know, because you guys, Joel's, I think there have been two more years. Senator Coles has been there,
yeah,
I think,
time.
Since the 80s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, their passion, and I really applaud them, you know, to try to address this issue. And I've told them, you know, let me know what I can do to be support. Because, yeah, we need to have less regulation, but there's a lot of things we do need adequate regulation in. And this is, you know, with the farm, with our water runoff and everything. And going on, you know, with the CAFOs, or I don't even like calling them CAFOs because I think
it's a loaded term.
It's a loaded term because I know a lot of the ones that are considered that are the large family farms. They're, you know, fifth generation farmers. And they saw the need that they need to get, you know, to this size, one, you know, for the prices. But two, once you get one operation, you know, let's say there's four brothers that used to have four farms of, you know, 100 head, you know, give or take. They combine their 400, but being efficient, they can get up to 800. And now those four, you know, four brothers are all in one farm under one roof. And now, hey, instead of working, you know, because we haven't taught cows yet to milk themselves, we've tried, you know, got a couple good farmers that do have a robotics milking parlors. But this is one where they can actually take a weekend off. I mean, like I said, going back to my uncle being in farming, you didn't take a weekend off hardly ever because you couldn't find any hired hands. So this, you know, is also, I think, you've seen more of the families that say, hey, maybe this makes sense into of, you know, let's expand, you know, let's all put ones under one roof. And also with the, you know, with the issues of manure and all this, I've talked to a couple legislators, a couple groups about manure digesters. You know, I mean, they're not there quite yet, but if, you know, we get the technology, invest in the technology to figure out what the manure digesters, this could help a lot of these larger farms say, hey, you know, instead of spreading it all on the fields, which you do need to spread on the fields because they do need the nutrients, but if you have this excess, if you can put it into an energy source, maybe you could, you know, have enough energy for your farm and a couple of the neighboring houses. So I think there's a lot of technology out there that may be able to help us alleviate a lot of these issues that we're running with these larger farms that are in the area.
Ren Couturi, with regards to the DNR and its ability to actually make sure that these farms are in compliance, do you think more funding is the solution, more staff? How would you help the DNR get to where it says it wants to be?
Yeah, first and foremost, we need an independent DNR that's not used as a political football to throw around political appointees to make decisions. These are trained scientists. These are experts in their field, and we need to allow them to do their job outside of the political arena. And I don't care who is governor at the time, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. We need an independent DNR now. It's hard to do your job when you have a political goal in mind or your boss is a political appointee. So first and foremost, I'd support an independent DNR. And, you know, talking about this manure issue and the CAFOs, I think it's really, really not a good solution to just hope that these farms size up and get with the economy how it is now. Because what we're seeing is the bigger these farms get, they're putting all of the small guys out of business, right? And I've talked to people who have 35 cows all the way up to 1,000 cows, right? And what we need is we need an investment in our UW Extension services to help these farmers where they are. We have the digester technology. It's here. You know, we have manure digesters, but we're not making the investments to help people right now where they are in their farm, whether you have 35 cows or 1,000 cows, to farm both, you know, in a way that's profitable, but also in a way that works for your entire community.
With that, let's take our first break here on the West Side. I'm joined by Representative Rob Summerfield. He's a Republican incumbent for the 67th State Assembly District. He lives in Bloomer. Ren Kachuri is the Democratic challenger in this race. She's a first-time political candidate. She lives in Chippewa Falls. We're talking this hour about all things under the sun. We just spoke a little bit about CAFOs. We've got groundwater, farmland runoff, a lot more issues to bring up. Also, we've got a whole bunch of people trying to get through on the phones. Hang tight. We're going to go to Wes in Chippewa Falls when we return from this short break. This is the West Side.
Support for WPR comes from the Washington Island Ferry, celebrating more than 75 years crossing Death's Door Passage year-round to Washington Island and Rock Island State Park in Door County. WISferry.com.
The National Park Service is taking reservations for free park ranger tours of the St. Croix River Stillwater Islands area and tours of the Bird Rookery near Stillwater. It's open to adults and young people 10 and older. Details online at nps.gov/SACN.
It's election season in Wisconsin. All 99 state assembly seats are up this fall. Today we meet two of the candidates running for the 67th State Assembly District of Western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. Here in the studio with me are Democrat Ren Kachuri of Chippewa Falls and Republican incumbent Rob Summerfield of Bloomer. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've just a reminder, the 67th Assembly District includes most of Chippewa County and a lot of Dunn County. Cities, towns, and villages like Bloomer, Cadott, Cornell, Chippewa Falls, Elk Mound, New Auburn, Wheeler, and many more. 1-800-228-5615. Let's go to Wes in Chippewa Falls. Wes, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. So a few years ago, I started my business here, and I've been growing it out. I employ a few folks, and a few folks out there are working because I'm in business. I'm a conservative guy, and I generally vote as to the right. My question for Mr. Summerfield is, being a business owner in Wisconsin today, there seem to be different tiers, and I'm wondering what I need to do to maybe get a check the way Foxconn's getting a check. Do I need to move my business to the east side of the state, or do I just need to donate more money?
Wes, thanks for the call. There's been a concern that, with the Foxconn $3-plus billion dollars. So, Rob Summerfield.
Yeah, I guess since Wes is in business, I treated this vote, really in depth. Read through everything, talking to constituents. One of the first persons to talk to me was Chippewa County Economic Development Director Charlie Walker. And Charlie said, Rob, you have to do this. I'm like, Charlie, tell me why. He's like, you don't realize the impact it's going to have on all our local businesses in the Chippewa Valley. We've got suppliers to the suppliers to the suppliers. So he was super excited about how this is going to grow the economy in the state of Wisconsin, and especially in the 67th Assembly. So started, going back. I'm like, hey, that's, great input, Charlie. Started going through more and more and more with the Foxconn issue. I then started to find out, for every dollar that invested from the state, we get $18 in return. We're going to get our money back. And we only get, Foxconn only gets it once they get their incentives through WEDEC. So this is the way that we need to keep on growing the economy. We haven't even mentioned, Foxconn coming into Eau Claire, 150 jobs, tech jobs, Eau Claire. Who would have thought 5 years ago when we were talking about the Confluence Project that we're going to get 150 tech jobs in our area? They're going to be able to work with UW Stout, UW Eau Claire, CVTC to hopefully transform our state. I mean, we used to be a huge manufacturing state. You know, that has slowly, throughout the last 30 years, has, you know, dwindled away. This gives us an opportunity to be a technology hub in North America. We're going to be able to compete with the West Coast, the East Coast, Chicago, everybody else, with keeping our young people in Wisconsin. As a father of three daughters, I'm just super excited at the potential, what Wisconsin's going to look like in 15 years, all the economic activity we're going to have, the high-paying jobs, the high-technology jobs that are going to allow our children, my children, my neighbor's children, to be able to go to school at UW-Eau Claire, UW-South, CVTC, and not go to Twin Cities, not go New York, Chicago, wherever. They're going to be able to stay to stay in Wisconsin, hopefully raise my grandkids, and have a great time in Wisconsin. And also, going to, you know, if you're looking into what Foxconn can do to it, with one of my budget amendments in the Foxconn debate, I suggested to Speaker Voss, and he took it, to create a five-year position in the governor's office as a liaison between economic development groups, businesses, to figure out what Foxconn need. So, Wes, feel free to reach out to my office. We can hook you up and show you, you know, this is the process, you know, sign up, and this is what Foxconn may be looking. I mean, this is where, when they're spending $10 billion in the state of Wisconsin, there is ample opportunity for businesses to keep on growing. And, you know, with that, we are going to keep, you know, the money. There are safeguards for the taxpayers. And finally, one of the first trucks into Foxconn in the excavating was from Bloomer, Wisconsin. Was A1 Excavating, had a couple of trucks, subcontracted through Hoffman, which is just down the road here in Black River Falls, who got a $100 million contract just in the beginning phases for Foxconn. So, I mean, this is where you're seeing it all throughout the state. There are safeguards to protect taxpayers, and this is an opportunity to transform Wisconsin, and especially with Foxconn coming into Eau Claire, this is going to give us opportunity in Chippewa Valley to hopefully transform our area to even more technology, and instead of having a brain drain, doing a brain gain for the people in the 67th Assembly.
Ren Kachuri, your thoughts? What would you say to Wes, concerned about, who was concerned about the money going to Foxconn versus smaller businesses like himself?
Yeah, certainly. And I understand the concern. You know, this is a $4.5 billion tax giveaway. It's the largest tax giveaway to any private foreign corporation in American history. And so I understand that many folks, not only here in the 67th, but across Wisconsin, would be deeply, deeply concerned. There was a recent report out that said that in 25 years, if everything goes perfectly smoothly with Foxconn, we would break even with this project. So I'm going to be 30 10 days before Election Day, and I think back to if in 1988 we had decided to invest $4.5 billion in the hot new technology of the time, a VCR manufacturing plant, would we have seen that return investment? I doubt it. I don't think so. And I would caution against putting all of our eggs in any one basket. We look at what happened in Detroit with the car industry. Technology changes very, very quickly, and I think we need to be very concerned about how much taxpayer money we're giving away to a private foreign corporation here in Wisconsin. And, you know, I don't blame other businesses who have been here for generations. We have 5, 6, 7 generation family farms that are struggling. Harley Davidson has been here forever. The paper industry, cranberry farmers, right? Any number of these Wisconsin family farms or Wisconsin companies that are struggling right now, right? They're looking at this Foxconn deal and saying, how can I get that same deal? And, you know, to my opponent saying that the return in investment we'd get from Foxconn, we get a higher rate of return of investment for every dollar we invest in higher education, our technical colleges, and our UW system, right? And yet we're starving those investments at this point in time. So I think it's time we look at our house here in Wisconsin and we say, what do we need to do to make sure that the businesses that are existing here now continue to thrive? And instead of overshadowing our budget for the next 30 years, right? I'm going to be, hopefully, have a long life and be an old woman by that point in time. And I would not like to see every single budget in Wisconsin be overshadowed by a $4.5 billion giveaway to a corporation. This is a tax handout. This is corporate welfare in the purest of forms. And we need to make sure we have a close eye on what's going on with this contract, make sure we're a watchdog of the Foxconn Corporation, and hold them accountable.
Rob Summerfield, you wanted to respond.
Yes. You know, going on, you know, corporate welfare, all this, you know, fun stuff we're talking about. You know, this is how we're at in the world now. We have to, as state, have to make investments to bring companies in. Actually, Michigan gave a better deal than what Wisconsin did, but they still chose Wisconsin. Right now with Kimberly-Clark, Arkansas said they can't compete with our issue, with, you know, the incentive packets we're doing. You know, that's how Texas, Arkansas, you know, a lot of these business, pro-business community states have done is we have to play the game. In an ideal world, I would love to say, hey, we don't have to do any corporate welfare or anything. In a pure world, I'm completely for that. But in this worldwide economy, we have to do this. We have to invest in to bring companies in. And that's where, with WEDIC, we do give help small businesses. You know, this last session, I think we've been very pro-business administration and legislature. They said, hey, we're here to help with you. What can we do in DNR or DOR, Department of Revenue? How can we lower our taxes? We are always looking to help small businesses. I mean, I'm part small businesses. I've worked with the NFIB, various small business groups. I mean, that's who I am, is small business. I'm in Supper Club, Land Title. I was part of a bowling alley. So that is my background. I'm still at the Supper Club. I'm still a little bit at the title company. I mean, I'm on the weekends working in my family's small business. So small business is probably my biggest passion and one of my biggest expertise coming, bringing down to Madison. So I'm here working my tail off to help these people in small businesses. And I'm open, hey, if they think there's something that the state could do better or could change, I have loved to sit down and talk with them. Because if you keep on moving Wisconsin forward and investing in helping our small businesses, which I am a part of, have been my whole life, I think I'm the person to really go down there and advocate strong for small businesses.
Ren Couture, you'd like to respond quickly? We have to take our second break.
Yeah, so if we really want to invest in small businesses here in the 67th, I think we need to do a lot to invest in our infrastructure here. And unfortunately, due to the Foxconn project, this is just one example. Governor Walker just raided $90 million in outstate road project funding to funnel down to Foxconn, right? So this is just one example that we're going to be seeing for decades to come of funding that was supposed to go to regions like the Chippewa Valley and develop our infrastructure that then went to down to Foxconn in the southeast of Wisconsin. So I'd like to see more investment in infrastructure here to really help grow our small businesses.
Rob Summerfield, first let me clarify, that didn't go to the company, that went to a highway rebuilding
mm-hmm.
that has been on the back burner for a while, but definitely to benefit Foxconn. Rob Summerfield.
Yeah, that's the economic development. And that's why this last budget, we got over $86 million in local road aid. You know, most of my municipalities in the 67th got an 8.65 increase in road funding in the local road aid. And that's along with the bridges. I mean, we got funding in this budget to replace Cobbin Bridge over north of Jim Falls in between, a very important bridge over there. So we are investing in all these other priorities. We can do more than just one thing. We can do multiple things. So that's where I think with our local road aids, our funding for towns, you know, this has been a great first step, 8.65. If you do a couple more budgets at 8.65, then we're, you know, getting them real good money to start redoing some of the roads.
You're talking about increases, percentage increases?
Yep, percentage increase. And there's, I think, three townships due to the numbers did not get the increase this last one, but it was a very nice increase.
With that, we have to take our final break here. The general election is coming up November 6th when voters in the 67th Assembly District will choose their representative. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll continue our conversation with Rob Summerfield, Republican incumbent from Bloomer, and Ren Couture, Democratic challenger from Chippewa Falls, when we return.
Support for WPR comes from the Cap Times Idea Fest, presented by UBS, the Burrish Group, September 28th and 29th on the UW-Madison campus. Information and tickets are at CapTimesIdeaFest.com. Support for WPR comes from Wasco Windows, specializing in the manufacturing, sales, and installation of high-performance replacement windows in southeast Wisconsin and the Fox Valley. More information is online at WascoWindows.com.
Summer Thursday nights in Tower Park, downtown Colfax, are special with music from 7 to 8 p.m., popcorn, root beer floats, and more. There's no charge to attend. The final evening, Thursday, August 16th, features Jim Herrick and friends. The rain venue is the Colfax Fairgrounds building.
Wisconsin Public Radio has provided voters with access to their state legislative candidates through live candidate discussions for more than 20 years. We hope these discussions engage listeners and present a platform for candidates to share their positions on important issues. I'm Rich Kramer. This hour on the West Side, we're talking with the two candidates running for the 67th State Assembly District. That district includes most of Chippewa County and much of Dunn County. Cities, towns, and villages, including Elk Mound, New Auburn, Wheeler, Cadott, Cornell, Chippewa Falls, among others. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment for the candidates. Let's just jump right back to the phones. We go to Willem, who has been waiting a while. Willem, thanks for hanging with us. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Well, first I wanted to respond to the representative's comments about socialism, and Ron Johnson has made the same remark. Socialism doesn't work, he said. Tell that to Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Great Britain, all the countries. They have national health care, and if that's socialism, I think that's good. This is the richest country in the world, and yet we have the highest infant mortality rate in the world. And it's very stressful. Everywhere I go, every gas station has signs, benefits to help people with their medical expenses because they don't have enough health care. So I think that's an issue that's just not true about the greatest health care system in the world. I've lived in other countries, and I haven't had to worry about if I get sick, I'm going to be ruined financially. But the other issue that I think is really important is an independent DNR, and we need an independent DNR because some of the rules are just bizarre, like the inability for the DNR to rule on the number of high-capacity wells. They can only permit individual high-capacity wells without taking into consideration how many other high-capacity wells are in the area. When you have an aquifer, it's like a bowl of water, and the number of straws that you stick into that bowl has an effect on the amount of water in the bowl. So just to ignore that, I think, is irresponsible. And then to remove any reference to climate change is just denying science. Here we emphasize STEM programs in our schools, but then we deny science that doesn't go along with their political viewpoint. So I'm really concerned about these things. I moved to Wisconsin in 1978 because of its environmental stance and history in the United States and because of its open and clean government. Scott Walker has appeared in Eau Claire maybe 100 times or more. I've never had access to ask him a question, or it's always these closed meetings that he has at his contributors to his campaign's factories, where the workers, they're not going to threaten their job by asking tough questions. So I never, in a democracy, shouldn't I be able to speak to my representatives, to the governor who is supposed to represent us? Shouldn't I be able to access to him?
We hear you loud and clear. Thanks for the thoughts. And with that, I wanted to go to Rob Sommerfeld about the idea of an independent DNR. I believe it was Jim Doyle, I'm not sure, but that created the political appointee to head the DNR. Do you think it's time that we go back?
Talking back and forth with colleagues and basically constituents, I'm open to the idea of the board. However, I do like having the DNR, head being responsible to the voters. Once you start breaking this off to an independent that's non-elected, you're kind of taking away from the democracy of, accountable government. So, right now, if you have an issue with the DNR, it's in the governor's office. You can contact myself, contact Senator Moulton, Senator Reinhout, Representative Walks, Governor, and we can, work with them, and use our office to say, hey, you need to be responsive to us because you're appointed by an elected official. To go to an independent board, you lose that accountability, with that. And you'd have to see on how is it made up. I mean, could we do a hybrid, something like we still have cabinet level position of DNR secretary along with, a board makeup independent of 10 people, I don't know how they get appointed. If you do a rolling, like we do the Board of Regents, that'd be something, if you do a split level and have them, 50-50, 60-40, looking into it that way. So you do hold people accountable for it. And then you do have independent if needed be, and also too, when you talk about independent board, how do we know who's independent? You know, we are talking about socialism. You know, we was talking, there's two different, you know, layers of socialism. You know, these Eastern or those countries in Europe can do a lot of this because they don't have a military like we do that has to defend the world. I'm sorry, the United States, if Norway, Sweden, whoever gets attacked or, you know, gets encroached upon, who do they look for? It's the United States. And that's, you know, where, you know, money is. So they do have this leftover money to do that. But after a while, you can see, I mean, Greece started to collapse, you know, that you need people working, you know, to sustain everything. And once you take, you don't incentivize people working, you're going to not have an economy anymore. You know, so these are all thoughts, you know, with independence, DNR board is how do we look for the right solution? Because, you know, I want to make sure when we're making policy decisions, which I'm going through one issue right now over in Taner Lake. I've talked to the Taner Lake people about the water quality, and there's a couple differing opinions on the way we should do it. So this is where you want to take as much as input as you can from everybody and come to a logical conclusion.
Ren Couture, you have already mentioned that you're in favor of the DNR secretary not being appointed by the governor. So any thoughts to Willem's comments just in general?
Yeah, certainly. Thank you for the call. So to address the healthcare issue, we in the state of Wisconsin have had almost 8 years of pretty much single party control. And yet we have not been able to do anything about the healthcare marketplace here in Wisconsin. That, I think, is unacceptable. I think we've spent a decade fighting over healthcare here in Wisconsin, and yet we have fewer and fewer insurance providers here in the state, and we have higher and higher costs, right? And so that's why I support two steps, right? I think it was wrong for our governor to reject Medicaid expansion dollars allotted under the Affordable Care Act. In fact, we're going to be on the hook, taxpayers in Wisconsin, the AARP estimates, that we're going to be on the hook for an extra $392 million as taxpayers in Wisconsin because we did not accept federal Medicaid expansion dollars. So we need to do something about health care now here in Wisconsin, and I think it's time for a priority shift in the state legislature and in Madison.
If you've got 15 seconds, Rob Summerfield,
yeah,
would you care
just,
to respond?
Yeah, jump back with the health care, what we've done. We got Molina insurance back in the market due to our stabilizing the market. Like I mentioned, the pooling of people, covering pre-existing. We're doing a good job, but I know right now health care, I'm looking forward to the next one, to keep on moving forward and looking for what free market approaches we can do to make sure that people are saving money, are covered, and have great health care to live forever.
That's our time. Thanks to the candidates for joining us this hour, and thanks for all of you tuning in. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.